often they're coming off other calls.
Okay. Okay.
As you well know. Barry, I see you on the line. I just wanted to make sure you could hear us.
I can hear you fine. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Good afternoon. We're just giving people another minute or so to join in. Good afternoon. We're going to start in just a few more seconds here. Okay. Claudia, do you think it's all right to start, or should we?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I just want to make sure, Virginia, you see everything on the screen as though if you'd start the call, right?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I'm moving the slides.
Okay, I think I'm good. All right, so welcome everyone. I expect we'll get a few more beats as we go forward, but I want to just get the call rolling. All right, well, the slides were moving. All right, so our agenda today, most of our time we are going to spend with Jody from the Cahen HIE. And I want to thank her so much for agreeing to present to us today on Cahen's experience about behavioral health data exchange, and that's a topic we've been spending a lot of time talking about, so we're looking forward to hearing about their how they've, as I call it, threaded this needle. And then I'll just spend a few minutes on updates, and we'll talk about the agenda for our next call. So does anyone have any questions or any topics they would like to make sure we touch on today? Okay, then we are going to give the floor to Jody. And it is Jody Denson. I apologize for not getting that last name in there before. And this is Jody's presented this at HIMSS just a few weeks ago. So we're really looking forward to hearing this presentation. And Jody, if you just tell me to advance the slides, I'll go ahead and do that for you.
Okay. Okay.
And if anyone's having problems seeing the slides, I could make them bigger, but it would make it harder for me. I would not be able to see the chat, so I'd like to leave the chat open, but if it's making it hard to see, let me know. I'll just take over the whole screen with the slides.
Okay,
Jody, it's all yours.
Okay, great. Okay, well, thanks for inviting me to talk today. And I think what I'll just kind of do is give you a little bit of background on Cahen, and then we'll kind of dive into how Cahen has handled consent around behavioral health care, and specifically then in a little bit more detail around 42 CFR and the work that we have done with our mental health centers. So I want to give you background on Cahen so you can kind of get a sense of our size and kind of where we're at across the state. So if you want to go ahead and advance the slide. Okay, so Cahen has over 2 million unique patients in Cahen. And let me give you a little bit of background on Cahen. So we're based out of Kansas. We're a statewide health information exchange. We're a nonprofit agency. And we were created by the Kansas Hospital Association and the Medical Society. And our board of directors is comprised of providers from throughout the state. And so we have hospital providers, ambulatory practice providers, and we have the executive director of one of our largest community mental health centers on our board. And so I think in terms of kind of getting this accepted and providers feeling comfortable with the exchange of data, it's really helped Cahen to have so many providers on our board of directors and to be advised by them. In addition, one of the other things that we do that we found is pretty successful is we have bi-monthly membership calls with all of our Cahen members. And so all of the project managers with Cahen are on that call. Our executive director is on the call. And we kind of every call, we go through kind of a list of changes. Or if we propose changes, we go through that with our members and then get their approval. And it's a time for them to ask questions. And it seems to really help. And it seems to be a nice way to build trust when they can just, you know, talk about things and talk to us about, you know, any of the questions that they might have. So we have 2 million members. We have about 5 million queries. Over 5 million queries a year. And then we have 600-plus healthcare organizations in production. And actually, this is outdated. We have, I think we're probably at about 800 right now. I should have updated that. But next slide. And so just to give you a sense of the products that we offer, it's just kind of the basics. You know, we do secure clinical messaging. One of the things that we found with behavioral health, our behavioral health providers, is they really like to use secure clinical messaging for patient referral with ambulatory practices. And so that's a product that they really use. We're query-based, and we have image exchange, and then we also have a personal health record, so a patient portal type to us, where, you know, all providers from throughout the state can use the patient portal. So the patient goes to one place to access their personal health records rather than having a patient portal at a hospital and an ambulatory practice and at a mental health center. They could just come to one place. And then, of course, we're connected to different registries for meaningful use to help our customers with that. And then we do patient alerts and data extracts. And our mental health centers are also pretty interested in the patient alerts. We'll send out, we can do an alert when a patient is admitted into the hospital, discharged, or when they have a medication change. So, next slide.
Hey, this is Virginia, just a second. I think someone has a phone open, and we're getting a little bit of background noise. So if you can check on your mute, that would be great.
Okay. And then just to give you a little bit of background about myself before we kind of dive into this. So I'm the project manager that works with all of the mental health centers and getting them connected across the state. And so I work with the mental health centers and with their EMR vendors in getting them connected and sending data into Cahen. And so I'm kind of up to my eyeballs in all of this with them. On this slide, I kind of talk about the key achievements legislatively that Cahen really had to achieve before we really started moving forward in getting the mental health centers connected and sending data. So, you know, one of the big ones was we had some really successful buy-in from our state legislatures and from our governor back in 2011. And so we normalized patient consent with SIPA, and then we reconfirmed it in 2012. And then we had decided that the Kansas Department of Health and Environment would provide oversight to us, to KHEN, even though we're a nonprofit. KDHE provides oversight. And they, KDHE technology functionality required for a security override was established. And so for security override on a patient, in Kansas, the state legislature decided that all patients that are going to our member facilities, all of those patients are in the exchange unless they choose to opt out of the exchange. And so this security override comes into play when either you have a patient that's opted out or when you have a patient that is being treated for substance abuse and we're required to block their information because of 42 CFR. And so the security override then comes into play either with patient consent or in a life-threatening emergency. And I'll get into that in a little bit more detail. And then we had all of our policies and procedures and our consent forms. We got SAMHSA's blessing on the language that we used. We had them take a look and provide input on our consent forms and our policies and procedures. Okay, and next slide. Okay, so this kind of goes into a little bit more detail of the security override, which I'm sure that you all are familiar with. So, security override comes into play when they've opted out, and or they have records that are accessible through KHEN that are protected under 42 CFR. KHEN doesn't disclose opt-out patient information unless it's a medical emergency or patient provides consent. And so, a medical emergency is really when the patient is uncommunicative and unresponsive. So one of the examples that I use that is true, so we had a patient show up at one of our mental health centers in their lobby, and the patient was kind of out of control, was kind of having a pretty severe episode and uncommunicative, unresponsive to talking to the staff. The police were called. And the staff at the center is what we call broke the glass on this patient. It was a substance abuse patient. Broke the glass on the patient to see kind of what was going on, what meds were being prescribed, and what the history was on this patient. So that was one example. And then the patient consent, we really make available, especially for the 42 CFR folks, is, if a patient is in a social worker's office, and this is a substance abuse patient, and their records are not accessible, they can give that provider consent at the time of care to access their records. And when they access the records, it's a one-time deal only. So they open up the records for that one time, look at KHEN and see what's going on with that patient, and then they have to lock that record back up. So, okay, next slide. Okay, and so one of the things that we really, I really get into discussions with the community mental health centers is who must comply for blocking substance abuse patient data for 42 CFR. And it's amazing the amount of debate that goes back and forth. And, we kind of get all kinds. We get mental health centers who say, I don't care about these regulations. I'm not going to send any substance abuse patient data to KHEN whatsoever. We're just not even going to discuss it. And then we have some who don't really understand federally assisted. So they think, federally assisted means if they have a grant from the Fed, and that's it. And that's not the case. Federally assisted means if you're getting any sort of federal dollars, so whether that's through Medicaid, Medicare, a federal grant, the VA, anything. And so really the only ones that don't qualify for that would be private substance treatment providers. And then the other requirement is that they have to hold themselves out as providing this treatment. And this is where we get into a lot of debate with our mental health centers. And I would suggest that you kind of have one point person that's really knowledgeable in this to answer all of these questions. Because they kind of, the mental health centers initially, they're so trained to protect patient data that they initially just say, we provide substance abuse. But really, when you boil it down, what it is either you have a specific program that is for substance abuse treatment, or you have a provider that actually provides substance abuse treatment. So it's not that you have a patient come in and is being treated for bipolar. And in that session, they disclose that they also think that they have a substance abuse problem. But that patient who has that bipolar disorder is seeing a licensed clinical social worker for the bipolar disorder. And that social worker just happens to then add into the chart that they disclose that they have a substance abuse problem. But the social worker's not treating them for the problem. I mean, they might discuss it, but they're not treating them. And they're not holding themselves out as a substance abuse provider. And so in that instance, you know, that patient does not be blocked, and 42 CFR wouldn't apply. So let's go to the next slide. Okay, so I'm diving deeper, a little bit deeper into federally assisted. And so you can kind of see, you know, what the requirements are. And so it's even a nonprofit is considered federally assisted. Okay, and next slide, yeah, okay. So again, here's kind of talking about, when you're talking to your mental health centers, they really have two different options, at least from kind of at KHEN. So the first is, and we give them this option, and I think it makes them feel more comfortable, and it gives them more buy-in, and it gives them a little bit more control. So their first option is that they can block that data at the EHR level if their EHR is capable of it. And most EHRs are capable of it. And so they block it at the EHR level, and that data never comes into KHEN at all. The problem with that is that if it's at the EHR level, it never comes into KHEN, and so then it's never available in case of an emergency. So let's say they show up at an ER and they're overdosed. That ER provider is not going to be able to log in and break the glass on that patient and see what meds have been prescribed to that patient. So not accessible in an emergency. I always give myself as an example because I purposely go to ambulatory practices and hospitals that send data to KHEN because I am allergic to penicillin, and it's a pretty severe reaction. I have trouble breathing, very extreme trouble breathing. But I'm also allergic to epinephrine, which is really bad news because when you have an allergic reaction, you usually get epinephrine. And so I have trouble breathing with epinephrine. And so I make sure, you know, that I go to these places that list this and that are participating in KHEN. So that's just kind of an example of if my data were for some reason to be blocked at the EHR level and I showed up at the ER, I could potentially be in pretty severe trouble health-wise. So that's an example of why we don't want that blocked at the EHR level. The other reason is that when it's blocked at the EHR level, it really takes away patient consent and it takes away patient choice. Because then that patient can't go into a provider's office and say, hey, I give you permission to look at my records. Because if they're blocked at the EHR level, then they're never in KHEN to be accessed at all. It can potentially kind of be a little bit of a liability issue for those providers that are blocking at the EHR level. Because if that patient shows up, at ER in trouble, and that mental health center is withholding their data, that can hinder an ER provider making a clinical decision. So let's see, and then blocking at the HIE level. So the concerns are that there needs to be, you know, ongoing communication between the provider and the HIE. So really what happens is the mental health providers will send me a list of their substance abuse patients at least once a week so that we can then opt them out of the exchange. And so I give them kind of a spreadsheet with the demographics that I need on patients in order to opt them out. And what triggers the list being developed by the mental health center is primary and secondary diagnosis, diagnosis at admit and diagnosis at discharge. And so that triggers them compiling their list. And then down to my second bullet point, the other concern is notification of security override without patient consent. So that would be in a case of an emergency. And so that's kind of a concern that mental health centers have But, you know, when we have a security override, we audit constantly for that, and so we would know. And then when security override happens, the provider that's doing it has to fill out our security override consent form and submit it, keep a copy and submit it to KHN. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this is kind of going about who's blocked. So not only primary and secondary diagnosis, but patients enrolled in any substance abuse program kind of triggers it, and then at intake and billing. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this is a little bit kind of about our mental health centers and who's using it. And one of the important things that I want to mention is that all of our mental health centers have a QSOA with us. And so we've got, this needs to be updated a little bit too, we've got, 17 mental health centers right now that are members. And I think probably about 80% of them treat substance abuse patients, so we're kind of dealing with this with all of them. And then kind of who's using it. So the health care home staff really use KHN because they can get addresses and insurance information, next of kin information. And then you can see, you know, hospital diversion management, medical records, and emergency services seem to be our big users from the mental health centers. Okay, next slide. Okay, and so why are they using it? And I kind of went through this in the beginning. But again, you know, patients that are seen recently at a hospital, they're getting alerts. They'll get labs through KHN. A lot of emergency situations. And then one of our big mental health centers uses it to find a diagnosis. They have certain programs that require a specific diagnosis before they can be admitted into the program. And so they'll look up that patient in KHN and try to find a diagnosis to get them admitted immediately into the program. And then they use it a lot for patient referrals. Okay, next slide. Okay, that's it. And I wish I had on my HIMSS presentation, I did a screenshot of our form for security override so you could kind of see what it looks like in the system. But what we do with security override, just to kind of add on to that, is we have all of our members designate about 2 staff people with permission to do security override. So not every KHN user has this permission. It's really like 2 staff people per facility. And so if, let's say, a social worker has a patient in their office that gives them consent, that social worker would have to then contact the designated staff person with security override permission, and that staff person would either have to come into the office and do security override or do it over the phone and then tell that social worker, you know, the data on that patient that's in KHN. So not everybody has it, only certain people, and each of our members chooses which person they want to have that permission. So let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I meant to talk about. Let's see. We've opted out so far. I think we've been doing this since about 2013. We've opted out about 6,800 patients so far because of 42 CFR. Again, we do it every week. And so I think I kind of covered everything. I'm sorry I zoomed through that a little quickly, but I'd be happy to open it up for questions if anyone has any questions.
That would be great, Jody. So okay. Are there any questions from the work group?
Jody, this is Dave Navarro with Michiana Health. When you say you have opted patients out due to 42 CFR, does that mean their entire record is not viewable, even though that they may have lab results or something that isn't covered under 42 CFR?
That's correct. That's how KHN has chosen to do it. So it's their entire record, and not only is it their entire record from, like, the mental health center, but if they are seeing a ambulatory practice provider, that record is blocked too. So we block across the board.
And when these 42 CFR sites send data to you, what form of what message types are they transmitting to you? Are they transmitting data to you like in a CCD or traditional HL7 messages? And the reason I'm asking that is I'm wondering if they use any of the data segmentation, if they're doing CCDs or any of the privacy and security templates that go along with the document.
Yeah. We get both. We get CCDs and HL7 data. We have a couple of mental health centers send it different ways. And so really our we work a lot with NetSmart, and NetSmart sends CCDs. We work with ClaimTrack. They send HL7 data. We've got a couple of other EMR vendors that we work with. So we do it both ways. I know that within the EMR systems, most of them have kind of, when they pull up a patient, they have an option to block the data or not. And I think some of them do have an option to block certain pieces of data, but we have chosen not to let that happen because we're a little hesitant to put all of that responsibility on our participants, where they pick and choose data that can and cannot be sent to us, and so we just choose to opt out that patient. And make the security override available, so it's not completely gone.
Yeah, we had a project with SAMHSA, sponsored by SAMHSA, with NetSmart, and we did receive CCDs from them. We had requested that they produce the privacy and security marking section in the CCDs that specifically related to 42 CFR data. They weren't able to do that then, but now I think that they're on board to do a secondary project with us. Hopefully we'll get them. And mostly what we were looking at is opioid treatment centers that they are in to make sure that they send us over the dosage schedule for the patient. But that's good information to know.
Good, good. And one of the other things that I didn't really talk about was our notice of privacy practice procedures. And this is true across the board for all of our members, whether it's 42 CFR or not. So we require that if they have notice of privacy practice up on their website, that they have to update it with language stating that they're participating in KN. And if a patient wants to opt out, they have to list the state website that the patient goes to opt out. That has to be up 30 days before we can go live to provide proper notification. In addition to that, we require that the practices put up posters in their registration and checkout area and brochures in their waiting area explaining that they're participating in an HIE and listing the website to go to. And we provide those posters and brochures to our customers, and then they also need to update their hard copy of their notice of privacy practice. And so when patients come in, they have to provide that. Some of our mental health centers have addressed this by actually doing a mailing to all of their patients because they were worried, given the nature of their patients, that these patients would have issues with it. So one of our mental health centers did a mass mailing explaining all of this to them. Another mental health center printed off our kind of opt-out form and made that available, and then designated a staff person that was educated in this and could kind of talk them through what they needed to do. And so that person was available if a patient ever wanted to kind of discuss this further. But we also made it real clear to our participants to not track a list. You know, our participants are not responsible for opting patients out. They shouldn't track a list and send us the list. And I'm talking about choice, that's the responsibility of the patient to go to the website and opt them out. The only list that we track is those 42 CFR patients. So that's kind of how we did the blanket notice of privacy practice changes.
Jody, this is Dave. I have another question for you. When you're putting all this data in a repository, what technology are you using? What vendor, if I may ask?
Well, our technology vendor is ICA, and we use MRF, but then the actual specific product that we use with ICA is called CareAline and CareExchange. CareAline is for our HL7 data, and CareExchange is for our CCDs. And they kind of merge and display together, so you could query for a patient, and if you get hits on that patient, you would see HL7 data and CCDs, you know, kind of all in one spot that you could click around on.
And do you guys currently have other vendors who are querying the repository, the Caroline or Care Exchange repositories, via like in their MetaTech system or in their Cerner or NextGen?
We do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome.
Yeah, definitely. We have some big hospitals that are using MetaTech and Cerner. And then also speaking about querying the exchange, we're also getting ready to connect to the Texas statewide exchange, and we're connected already to Colorado, and we hope to connect to Missouri soon. And so we are working on actually connecting to other states.
Are you doing those connections via the eHealth exchange, or are you just connecting to those health information exchanges separately?
It's via the eHealth Exchange.
Okay. We are part of the eHealth Exchange as well, Michiana Health Information Network in South Bend, Indiana, so we should be available to connect you as well.
So. Oh, good. Okay. Good.
Other questions? David, a couple questions I had. When you talk about the break the glass and a limited number of people having the authority to do that, right, to do the override, is anyone notified when an override is done?
Definitely. It triggers an automatic notification to KHIN, which goes straight to my executive director, and we also notify the state. And then we also immediately contact the practice that security override came from. And then that practice has to, you know, either submit the patient consent form or the details around, why it was an emergency and they needed to do it. And they'll get audited. They get audited, and there's, you know, I hesitate to use the word investigation because we want them to use it for those reasons, as long as they're proper reasons. But we do contact them and go through it with them.
My computer did something on its own here. Apologies. Were there any areas where you found you had the biggest challenges or pushback or issues? I mean, to get to the point that you're at now, where would you say the biggest roadblocks were?
I'd say one of the things that really helped us with the roadblocks when we first really began was to get, like I said, one of the biggest mental health centers executive director on our board, and then to get really kind of the big two to three mental health centers on board. And in Kansas, and I'm sure this is the same in every state, but all of our mental health centers meet once a month. The executive leadership meets, and so they all talk, you know, and they all kind of trade information. And so when those two big ones kind of got on board, then the others felt more comfortable. But currently, I'd say our roadblock is, I mean, we do have, I can think of two mental health centers we have the connections ready to KHIN. We've done the work building their interface. We've worked with their EMR, and they're so hesitant about 42 CFR that they're not ready to go live with us yet, even though I've kind of talked to them about this. We've talked to their leadership. So we do hit some providers that are just not comfortable with it. And that's why I always tell them, if you're not comfortable with it, then let's at least lock at the EHR level, and you have control over that. So we do run into that sometimes.
Are there other questions anyone has? Jody, if you have a couple more minutes to stay on the call, there's a tool that I'm going to present now that we've been working on to capture information on these practices, and I'd love to just get your feedback on the direction
Sure.
we're heading with that. Okay.
Jody?
Go ahead.
Jody, yeah. This is Dave with Michiana Health. I just had one additional question on the technology side. It sounded like you were using ICA. For the MIRTH part, are you using MIRTH Mail as your HISP solution or in the MIRTH engine or MIRTH results?
I don't believe we're using MIRTH for our HISP. I believe it's just ICA is our HISP.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions? I don't want to cut off the conversation here.
Well, feel free to email me or call me if anyone has any questions later.
So, Jody, what we did in the last phase of our work is we just collected general stories about data exchange success to sort of counterbalance the view that seemed to be emerging that nobody was sharing data. And then the group decided they wanted to focus into this area of consent and 42 CFR Part 2. So we, in the last phase, developed a template, and now we've developed a new template that we are going to solicit people to submit examples to, and then we post that information on the EHI website so that people can look at other programs and what they're doing. And there are two slides here, and I welcome everyone's input on this. This form has obvious information about who's responsible here and what are the laws or regulations that are governing what they're doing, and are they opt-in or opt-out? Who's involved in the data exchange with a special emphasis on substance abuse and mental health providers, but also others? And then what problem does your consent model or procedures address? And then a description of the practices that have been implemented. And does your organization manage data that falls under 42 CFR Part 2? What categories of data are exchanged? What data is excluded from exchange? What standards were implemented? I was glad Dave asked that question because that was in our form. I'll go through the second page and then we can come back and see if we have something here that doesn't make sense or we missed something. So the next part is what policies were adopted, what legal agreements, what clinical workflow impacts were there, and then a technical overview sort of looking at data flows between organizations or data storage, transport, documented improvements that happened. We're looking also in our past phase and this phase to be able to express to people the benefits of engaging in this data exchange. What are the challenges and how were they addressed? Any other links or additional documentation and a point of contact so that if someone saw the example from Kansas, then they could call Jody or some other contact and get more information. So, from the viewpoint of what you would want to know, Jody, you touched on a lot of these, so that really encourages me. I want to make sure we're capturing the information that people would want to know and about what practices other organizations have. So this is sort of a validation step for the whole group, and then we can start to use this, send this out, to start to solicit these examples.
Great.
Any comments?
Well, I think that you've hit on all of the areas that need to be addressed. I think the legal agreements and policies is a big one because it needs to be aligned with your state regulations. And so, you know, different states do it in different ways. And so you want to make sure legally that all of that, you've got your I's dotted and your T's crossed. See what else. And then, you know, I think the opt-in states versus the opt-out states will have different ways of handling that. But it seems like quite a few of the HREs do have that security override available. I think you've done a nice job here.
No, kudos to the group who helped us. We did a lot of work on this on our last call. Others on the call, do you have any comments or thoughts about how we can make this better? Okay, well then, that's a major milestone. We are ready to start trying to solicit these examples. And then just suggestions for outreach. I wanted to see if we are in touch with, we've been in touch with Commonwell and with the Sequoia Project, and they are willing to collaborate with us and reach out to their members to ask them for examples. And obviously we'll use the EHI network. Is there any other suggestion that anybody has? I think there was one other, do I have that on the slide? No, I don't. Like one project that there was a name of that we had, like Colby or something like that, that we're going to look into, but I haven't been able to find a contact for that. Any other place you think we should look who could reach out to organizations and get these, help us get these examples? Okay, well, if you do come up with any suggestions, please send them along. We want to make sure we cast the net as widely as possible. And then here's our quick look at where we are on our timeline. We're still in March. We're ready to solicit our examples and do that to the end of April. So we're right on track here, which is always good news. And then for our next call, I just got an email just before this call from Laura Young, who is part of the Arizona Behavioral Health Network, and she offered on our last call to do a presentation, couldn't do it this call, but said she'd be happy to do it on the next call. If you have suggestions for other things we should do on the next call, I'd love to hear those. Please send anything along to any of the EHI staff and myself who, if something occurs to you after this call or you weren't able to speak up today, we want to make sure these calls have value for you. And anything else? Okay. Well, I'm always happy when I can give everyone some time back. And Jody, thank you so much. We hope we can use Cahen as one of our examples. I'll be sending one of our templates out to you, and you'll probably be our first contributor. So we really, really, really appreciate it.
Well, we're happy to help, and thank you for having me today.
Okay. All right. Claudia, anything you wanted to add?
Sorry, I was on mute. No, this is great. Thanks so much, Virginia. Thanks, everyone,
okay,
for participating.
Okay. All right. Bye.
Okay. Goodbye.